Hi,
this is Take Charge Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye.
Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health, and I'm with my co-host and an amazing special guest, my co-host,
Carol Peterson, pharmacist.
My guest is Dr. Chuck Simone. Now, the first time many years ago, I had Dr. Simone on the program, and I started reading off his credentials. After about 10 minutes, he interrupted me and said, well, you know what? I think that's good enough. So let me just start with the first sentence or two of his credentials so you understand what we're dealing with. First of all, Dr. Simone is an internist. He's a medical oncologist at the National Cancer Institute. He's a tumor immunologist. He's a radiation oncologist at the University of Pennsylvania for many, many years. He's also an author of Cancer and Nutrition, a 10-point plan for prevention and cancer life extension. And now I must tell you, it goes on and on and on, but I want to welcome you, Dr. Simone.
Well, thank you very much for having me today.
This time I didn't go on and on.
That's good.
But I asked you here specifically because there is so much hysteria right now in terms of the media and the politics and the fights that are going on in relationship to treatment, cure of COVID. There have been over 300 cease and desist letters sent out to doctors, to acupuncturists, to nutritional companies, to nutritionists saying do not talk about COVID cures or you could lose your license. We know of that a board in California has sent out letters to all its physicians to specifically block certain drugs for being prescribed to treat COVID. So I would love, you know, you're the most dispassionate, that wasn't an insult, focused person I know. And I wanted something clear, non-hysterical, non-political, an understanding of what we're dealing with and what the science says to this point. I know it will be changing, but to this point. I'll never forget one time, and I'll give you this quick story. I was at a chronic fatigue conference that was open to all. And one doctor got up on stage and told his theory. And everybody started clapping and clapping and clapping. And another doctor got up and said, excuse me, we don't appreciate that. Science is not a popularity contest. Science focuses on what works and how to utilize it. So please do not clap. So Dr. Simone, what do you think of all of this? It's a little bit crazy out there, isn't it?
It is. Let's talk about the very positive study. Then we can talk about other things as well. The big study that came out that showed a very positive relationship between treating patients with COVID-19 and hydroxychloroquine, zinc, zithromycin.
Oh.
Done by the Henry Ford COVID-19 Task Force. These are clinicians at one single health system in Detroit, Michigan. Now, that's important because many other studies that were published were gleaned from hundreds of institutions, 140 institutions, for instance, with 90,000 patients. And these studies, the one that I'm talking about with 143 different institutions with 90,000 patients, they're reviewed by three individual people. And they brought forth the science that then was rejected and the papers published had to be removed and retracted. Those three people, let me just review that for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
One was an adult model. The second was a science fiction writer. And the third was the CEO of this three-person company. And the FDA and Lancet and New England Journal of Medicine relied on those three individuals to present scientific information in a few short weeks of time, reviewing 90,000 people around the globe with different languages, different cultural issues in their hospitals, different coding systems, simply impossible and fraudulent.
How,
let's go to the Henry Ford study.
I'm a little confused. How could that happen? How could that go into our medical literature? I can't understand that.
That's terrible. That's what happened. Three people, one company, three people, one CEO was on both papers, New England Journal of Medicine, Lancet.
And these are very important medical journals, very respected medical
journals. Very respected. At first they said, no, there must be something wrong, but then 2 weeks later they retracted the articles altogether. But the media doesn't talk about retraction very much. But let's go on to the positive thing.
Okay.
The positive study started with the Henry Ford COVID-19 Task Force. They were in one health system in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
It involved 2,541 patients.
Oh, nice.
It was accepted. The paper was accepted June 29, 2020. And the title of the article was Treatment with Hydroxychloroquine, Azithromycin, and Combination in Patients Hospitalized with COVID-19. Now, this is a system composed of six large hospitals. The largest is an 802-bed hospital, teaching hospital, in Detroit. What I'm trying to tell you is that this is one system, one computer system, one group of people looking at 2,500 patients. And now you can make some conclusions, because no one is gyrating the data. We're all looking at the same information from one system. The conclusion, according to the protocol-based treatment, among hospitalized patients, the use of hydroxychloroquine alone and in combination with azithromycin was associated with a significant reduction in hospital mortality compared to not receiving hydroxychloroquine. Steroids were also used. Now, I have a graph there on my website about their study, and it is significantly different. So hydroxychloroquine alone showed that there was a significant difference. The dose, and again, knowing the doses of these studies is very important as well.
Mm-hmm.
They used hydroxychloroquine 400 milligrams twice a day for two doses on day one, but then on days 2 to 5, 200 milligrams twice a day. So it wasn't a high dose. Relatively low dose.
What is a normal dose of hydroxychloroquine?
If you're treating lupus or...
sometimes, most of those people, those lupus patients, et cetera, they use 200 milligrams once a day.
Okay. For long term, every day, all the time.
Every day for years and decades and decades. This is a 5-day course, 200 milligrams twice a day for days 2 to 5, and on day one, 400 milligrams twice a day. That was that study. They also used azithromycin, 500 milligrams once a day for 5 days, and also zinc and steroids. Now, the issue, the critical issue here is, well, this is not a randomized study. And the FDA goes crazy about that. Big Pharma goes crazy. If you don't have an FDA-approved randomized study, it can't be worthwhile. However, we showed, and we wrote in our article, that observational studies are as good, if not better, than randomized studies. And I go through all the data for it. And we looked at this when I did the study about antioxidants improving the lifespan of patients who are receiving chemotherapy or radiation therapy. So the observational studies are equal to or better than randomized studies, so it should never be criticized about it. We know also in 2005, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, in 2005, 15 years ago, wrote an article entitled, "Chloroquine is a potent inhibitor of SARS coronavirus infection and spread." And they postulated then, 15 years ago, that chloroquine works by blocking the virus from attaching to the human cell's receptor. Other researchers show the same thing. The hydroxychloroquine can increase the pH, and that's the critical thing. One of the critical ways of hydroxychloroquine working here is that it increases the pH to a more alkaline pH. Acid is what is loved by the coronavirus. Chronic illnesses, all chronic illnesses, cancer, heart disease, diabetes, loves acid. Hydroxychloroquine increases the pH. We also use our formula to increase pH to 7.5. But we know now that hydroxychloroquine can increase the cellular pH. That's important because that decreases the ability of the virus to invade the cell. It also impedes the attachment of the virus to the cell.
So what? So
it has multiple effects, including antithrombotic effects.
Oh, my goodness.
Patients die is because they form clots right in front of your eyes. As the neurosurgeon goes into the brain to remove a clot from the brain, another one before their eyes are forming. So hydroxychloroquine has another effect of antithrombosis to decrease the whole notion of clotting.
I cited this study to somebody, and they said, well, we have a novel, brand-new coronavirus, so you can't just say that the study from the SARS COVID from before in 2005 applies to today's situation. We have a different virus.
It is a different virus, a very different virus. The mechanism of attachment is similar, if not identical. So that's why hydroxychloroquine works. The virus today, the SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19, has been bioweaponized.
Yeah.
It was manufactured by a woman by the name of Shi, S-H-I, in Wuhan. And this woman not only put in more potent attachers to the virus to seek out this ACE2 receptor on the cell, and we can get into that if you want. But it also put in HIV proteins that causes this severe immune system disruption. This has all been shown in paper after paper, published paper, and guess where the funding came from for this woman's work? The United States taxpayer.
Was it some of that work done in North Carolina, this chart?
He was part of it, as well as Harvard. They're all in the same very important paper that was published in 2015. And all the authors, including the USAMRIID, which is the United States Army group in Fort Detrick, which allowed them to use a cell line that was critical to make this a bioweapon. But we're getting off the point.
Exactly.
The point today is hydroxychloroquine, and it works by interfering with the attachment, it increases the cellular pH, and it also has antithrombin effects, as well as decreases inflammatory cytokines like IL-1 and IL-6.
Now, there are a couple of things I wanted to ask you, things that are being said on television, and I saw it last night, literally on Cuomo's show. They're talking about how unsafe it is, how dangerous It is for cardiovascular arrhythmias. But yet, you said that there's a 200 milligram dose given for years and years and years to people with lupus. Have they seen cardiovascular disease develop in these patients? Are there cardiovascular...
It's not cardiovascular disease. There's a problem with the electrical system. But when you combine hydroxychloroquine with Zithromax, combine those two, the Zithromax seems to be the more of an offender of the QT interval, the electrical system, than hydroxychloroquine. So if you look at the data from that Detroit study, and you look at hydroxychloroquine alone versus the combined use of hydroxychloroquine and Zithromax, there is a difference, but hydroxychloroquine still wins out over the combination. So I would use only hydroxychloroquine and not add the Azithromax, which increases the QT interval. Obviously, if you have a cardiovascular patient, you check the QT interval with a simple electrocardiogram, $35, $50 cardiogram, and check the QT interval every so often. But when you're dealing with short-term 5 days' worth of hydroxychloroquine, the effects will be minimal, I'm sure, but the QT interval should be checked.
Now, where does zinc play into this picture? Because we know that as a population, we're low in zinc. So where does zinc
fit in? Zinc is remarkable. Years and years ago, I wrote a book called How to Save Yourself from a Terrorist Attack. And that came out a few days after 9/11, actually. So, the last page of that book, page 49, I have a whole page about how to defend yourself against a viral attack. And I wrote then that zinc was extremely important, should be added to everybody's daily intake no matter what. 50 milligrams once per week has been shown to decrease the death rate of all viral infections around the world in people aged infant, months old, to age 90. They looked at all ages, and they found that zinc alone can actually increase the immune system and decrease the mortality and morbidity from death from viral infections, bacterial infections, with a miserable few pennies a week zinc. Zinc is remarkable.
So the more the better? Right. Or is there a limit? Should we?
Well, during these treatments, several of the studies have used zinc every day, 50 milligrams every day for 5 days for its treatment. So it's not much. It's a very, very remarkable thing. It has been shown to do other things, too. We know it has antiviral effect, as I just mentioned. It also can inhibit the growth rate of this particular virus by interfering with the coronavirus RNA-dependent polymerase. That's very important, too. It just interferes with it. It increases a protein, another enzyme to further kill these viruses in general. And it enhances the immune system, all the parameters of the immune system as well.
Now, I want to ask you, what has happened?
Do I take zinc every day? Yes.
Yes.
I want to ask, now this is your opinion, but what has happened? Why has everybody gone so crazy and negative on this relatively non-toxic therapy that has the potential of blocking the virus, and even they're showing that it prevents the virus? So what's happening here? Do you have any idea? I know.
I think it's a very simple idea. One, the FDA has, let me see, I'll find the date. In June 15, 2020, the FDA revoked the prior emergency use authorization to use hydroxychloroquine or chloroquine to treat COVID-19 in certain hospitalized patients. That was a few weeks, a month or two ago. And look at what's happening. At the same time, they approved remdesivir. We could go into that in a minute. But there's no, remdesivir costs lots of money. Hydroxychloroquine costs pennies per day. Now, if you're doing a prevention program, it's 200 milligrams twice a week, or 200 milligrams when you're having a problem or when you're being exposed. So it's pennies versus thousands of dollars, patents versus no patents.
Okay.
Well, the FDA is taking a very unusual stance here, because normally when a drug is approved for a particular use, and that's what the FDA requires, that doctors are free to prescribe these drugs for other related uses without going through another FDA approval.
Because the approval, the approval has shown that it's safe. Go on, Carol.
Right,
I'm sorry.
Right. It's already safe and effective in the terms of what it was approved for. But we have so many drugs on the market, and people estimate that 80% of drugs in use in the United States are used off-label, not for the original indication that the FDA approved it for. So why is the FDA putting in these statements, yes, you can use it, no, you can't use it? They are not acting within the parameters. That is the usual course of what happens.
Well, the FDA is not saying that. Dr. Steve Hahn just yesterday said that it should be between the patient and the physician about this drug. That's what he said yesterday. So the official statement was, as I mentioned, they revoked the emergency use authorization, but yesterday came out with the statement that you could use it if your doctor and you approve of it as a patient. However, the states have a different notion.
Exactly. And pharmacists.
Yeah, the state of New Jersey says if you have lupus, then you prescribe it as it is, 200 milligrams every day. If you don't have lupus and you're suspected of COVID-19 or something, then you're only allowed a seven-day treatment course of pills, seven pills. So every state has their own little twist on this, thinking that Big Brother knows better than physicians who are out in the field treating patients.
Right, they're actively doing little protocols that are okay and only under these conditions. Only if you're in the hospital. You can't use it to keep yourself out of the hospital. And so I have a chart. I can post it to our Facebook page. All of these pharmacy boards are, as you say, Dr. Simone, this is a direct assault against the patient and physician relationship.
Well, it is.
All our laws are set up to protect that. So why are all these boards, medical boards, pharmacy boards, trying to interfere with that, trying to interfere with the basic practice?
Well, Carol, you didn't say what the pharmacy board has told pharmacists, as I understand it. You can correct me, Carol, because you know more about this than I do, that they can block dispensing of hydroxychloroquine to patients if they choose to, that they can block the dispensing of the medicine. Is that not true, Carol?
It's even stronger than that.
Okay.
Each state has something different, but it can be, I saw for several states, only a 14-day supply, only if you've been tested and have positive test for COVID-19, some states only in the hospital, but not if you're trying to be treated at home and being kept out of the hospital.
Now,
so this is hugely unusual, hugely.
Now, the power of the results. Now, there's this Dr. Valenko, and did I pronounce that correctly, Carol? Valenko?
I think so.
From Muncie, New York. He wrote up 3 months ago, and I sent it out in my newsletter, that he had 750 cases with no deaths, and he's treating with the hydroxychloroquine and zinc and azithromax. He's doing this protocol, and he's dealing with high-risk patients. He's dealing with people with hypertension, diabetes. He's dealing with high-risk patients. Well, he's just written up in conjunction with two other doctors from Germany, a 200-page monograph with studies, all the studies, the positive studies about hydroxychloroquine and how it's being utilized in different areas and its effectiveness.
These are yet to be published or being published now, showing that there is a definite benefit to using hydroxychloroquine. In fact, on July 11th, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons say this: there's no reason the nation should be locked down when safe, affordable medicine like hydroxychloroquine should be available. So
right.
there are good organizations that are coming out with these statements because of what is happening with the data as it evolves, and there's no reason not to do this.
I'd like to ask you, Dr. Simone, about the potential use of quercetin and ECGC from green tea, which behave in part just like hydroxychloroquine in the ability to utilize zinc inside the cell. Would these two natural supplements that are available to everybody, would they have some of the other benefits of hydroxychloroquine, or has that not been elucidated?
Yeah, no, that's true. I'll read some of the things I wrote on that single page I was telling you about from the book, How to Defend Yourself from a Terrorist Attack.
And that was written in 2000?
Thing, 2000, yeah. 20 years, almost 20 years ago.
Wow.
But this is very important. The quercetin story is extremely important because it also acts as a blocking agent for viral attaching to the cell.
Uh-huh.
It's a great thing to use. At one time, there was a scarcity of it in the country because everybody started using it. But quercetin, 500 milligrams twice a day, is extremely important to do. So this is what people should be doing now. I take quercetin every day, actually.
Uh-huh.
So that's important. Lysine also has been shown to be helpful and very instructive. We also know lysine, 500 milligrams, twice a day, three times a day, four times a day. These are all very important antiviral agents. Lysine interferes with the viral replication. So these are over-the-counter. These cost pennies a day to use. We know that vitamin C is extremely instrumental. So all these things are important to do. I recommend patients using anywhere from 2 to 4 grams a day every day. No question about that. And acetylcysteine, 600 milligrams twice a day, also interferes with viral replication. Vitamin D, extremely important. Vitamin D enhances the immune system, but also has just been shown to interfere with any cardiac damage from COVID-19.
Oh, so wonderful.
Most people are deficient.
Important.
I'm sorry?
That's important. People are talking about that now.
Most people in the Northeast, people who wear clothing all the time in the Northeast or other places, generally are way down in vitamin D levels in the serum. I start patients anywhere taking from 5,000 to 10,000 units a day and watch their blood level to get up to the 80 range, 80 range. So vitamin D every day, quercetin, 500 milligrams twice a day, a good multiple vitamin, and acetylcysteine, 600 milligrams twice a day, zinc, 50 milligrams every week, unless you're being exposed during these times. And lately I've been taking it because I see patients. I've been taking it every day, 50 milligrams every day.
Let me ask
you. In addition to that, hydrogen peroxide, swish and gargle with it. That's very important. It'll kill bugs on contact. And I also advocate, even then, 2001, 9/11 time, advocate sinus rinses with saline, nasal saline.
Uh-huh.
Very simple to do. If the ports are kept open, the sinuses can't get blocked. And when they don't get blocked, they drain, and viruses can't go up a Niagara Falls if it's draining properly.
Uh-huh.
Wash hands, face with soap. People wash hands, they forget their face. You have to wash your face, too, because we touch our faces all the time. And, of course, bleach contaminates inanimate objects, including skin. So you can dilute bleach 1 to 10, 1 to 9, and you'll get a very good antiviral effect from the bleach. I also tell people, not now, obviously, but during normal times when they're flying around, they should rely only on the outside air for the cabin. You have to tell the pilot to do that. Why the pilot doesn't do that is because it costs more money and fuel to bring outside air into the cabin. Certainly shut off the little valve above your head so you don't get inside air blowing right at you, but ask the pilots to use outside air for cabin air.
Do they respond?
No.
But they could do. Maybe
one would never know anyway. I'd ask, but who knows if it happens.
No.
You don't know. But if enough people are aware and ask, they may start paying attention.
Where does vitamin A fit into this?
Vitamin A, you know, it's a good viral agent, antibacterial agent. It rests in the mucous membranes. But I like beta-carotene first because beta-carotene enhances the immune system and then spills into changes into vitamin A when needed by the body.
Isn't that...
Beta-carotene is more important as an immune system stimulator than vitamin A, and it will convert over to...
Isn't that only with adequate thyroid function? The conversion?
What?
The conversion from...
No, yeah, well, most people have normal thyroid function, but if there is deficiency, then it won't convert. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, there is a drug that they're talking about, and you brought it up also, remdesivir. Am I pronouncing it correctly?
Yeah, remdesivir.
Desivir.
Okay. We can go right to that subject now, too.
Please.
The title of the report I wrote was, Remdesivir Does Not Save Lives. It decreases recovery by only 4 days. And it was primarily funded by the U.S. taxpayer. So why the heck should we pay for it?
Yeah.
Anyway, U.S. taxpayer now is being told it's going to cost $3,100 for a five-day course of remdesivir to decrease recovery time by a mere 4 days for hospitalized COVID patients. Now, we shut down our entire country and economy to prevent COVID-19 patients from dying, not to prevent them from spending a few extra days less in the hospital. Uh-huh. Remdesivir doesn't save lives, but dexamethasone, an old and very inexpensive drug, actually does save lives. So let's focus on saving lives, I wrote.
Okay, let's explain what dexamethasone is.
Dexamethasone is a steroid. It's an anti-inflammatory agent. All steroids are the granddaddies of anti-inflammation. Inflammation is the major problem that patients with COVID in the hospital have. Once the disease progresses to a point, it just causes tremendous inflammation, lung inflammation, heart inflammation, you name it. All the organ systems start to fail because of inflammation. Dexamethasone can turn that around. Dexamethasone costs pennies. Remdesivir, $3,000. Doesn't make sense. Remdesivir doesn't save lives and allows the people to get out of the hospital 4 days earlier. That's it. 4 days for $3,000.
I just saw a study comparing seaweed versus remdesivir, and seaweed actually came out on top. Just to put this in perspective.
Yeah, well, I think anything might, but I don't know that study. But
okay, I could send you a copy, Dr. Simon, sure. If you'd like, and I can post this on our Facebook page too.
So
very interesting.
You know, so all of this has become so politicized. I have a patient that doesn't want to talk to me because I suggest that hydroxychloroquine is an effective treatment, and he says that I'm supporting Trump, and he doesn't trust me any longer, which is far from the truth. I'm not supporting anybody other than I am supporting the use of a drug that is very reasonable, very easy to take, minimal, if any, side effects, and can block COVID. It's most effective in its early stages. It's most effective in prevention and early stage cure. It's not effective once you're on a ventilator. It's not able to work, but in the early stages, when it's in an upper respiratory phase and you're feeling the symptoms and you know what you've got, it can block it. This therapy can. So this is not a political statement I'm saying, but it has become so because I support this drug. What do you think of this, Dr. Simone?
Well, the whole thing has been politicized. For instance, Gilead, you know, the maker of remdesivir, they applied for a patent for this drug in September of 2016. The patent was finally issued in April of 2019, and they paid the balance of the cost to the patent office in April 30th of this year, during the height of the pandemic.
Uh-huh.
So now you have a drug company forcing or coercing or influencing the FDA to pass the drug as efficacious. When you look at the studies, who did most of these studies, most of the researchers are from the U.S. government facilities. United States Army, United States Army Medical Research Institute, Infectious Diseases, and the Center for Disease Control. But not one of those people who did most of the work on the remdesivir has ever been put on any of the patents. No government official has been put on the patents. So this is a highly political thing. The authors of that particular paper are listed here in my report, as is the institutions from which they are. Most of the authors are all from Gilead. Very few are mentioned from the armed forces or the CDC. So they are taking information given to them by the U.S. taxpayer supporting USAMRIID, the Armed Forces, the Army group. Uh-huh. They're taking all that information and bringing it right to their own company. And somehow we've allowed this to happen. In October 2015, November 2015, we gave them all the information that they published in the journal Nature, which is a very prestigious journal as well. So what I recommend is we have to get rid of the politics. We have to objectively look at studies. If studies don't work, if the drug doesn't work at all, 4 days is not worth money. 4 days getting out of the hospital sooner. It doesn't save lives. Hydroxychloroquine does. But we need to look at data objectively and base our treatments on that. Hydroxychloroquine is best used in early stages. So when a person begins having a cough or a fever, those are two major things, or loss of smell or taste, we know that the viral load will peak around day 5 of those symptoms. So we need to get in there then and start treating, and that's the best time to treat. Early symptoms, viral load peaks day 5, day 8, day 9 is when the respiratory function starts to deteriorate. So we need to treat these patients earlier as outpatients to prevent the catastrophe that we see in patient-wise.
So the taste and smell symptoms are highly associated with active zinc. Not enough zinc anymore as this virus is taking hold. So I think that's something we can watch for. Or people who are already suffering from those symptoms, they need to pay attention to their zinc therapy.
You know, most people have zinc deficiencies or marginal loads of zinc in their blood supply. So 50 milligrams once a week is extremely important. As I mentioned before, when I did the studies for that book I wrote, How to Save Yourself from a Terrorist Attack and Viral Attack, I showed that zinc was critically important to save lives from death, people from dying of viral infections, and people dying from bacterial infections from ages months old to age 90-plus old. All ages, all around the world, third world countries, industrialized countries, didn't matter. Zinc was important to really stimulate the immune system.
It's interesting how you phrased it in 2000, how to save yourself from a terrorist attack, when actually that's what this pandemic is. It's a viral attack on us and yeah, us as a society.
Right.
So you just have to rephrase it slightly, and you've got everything there. What I love about your books is the level of documentation that you have in each and every one of your books, explaining where your opinion came from.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say the actual title of that page is Defend Yourself from a Viral Attack.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Right after, I think we did have you on the radio advertising this book.
I was on many shows at the time.
But also ours.
News. I was on Fox News Channel about 16 times during that period of time.
Wow.
So, have you been on there now? Are they calling you back?
Not recently, no.
I'll see.
Oh, it's a pity. This is the message that people need to hear. They need to hear, just as our program is Take Charge of Your Health, all the things you've outlined here from your chapter are easily obtainable for everybody.
They're
for pennies.
Yes, pennies, but they're also... This is an outline of our last shows in the last 3 months, literally.
Yes.
We have gone through everything. The only thing that you didn't mention was, that we haven't mentioned really, is beta-carotene. We've spoken about vitamin A per se, but we're open to adjustment. But we have been telling our listeners, prepare yourself. And we've been talking about it on all different levels. We've been talking about it as a nutrient intake, but we've also been talking about in relationship to food and fresh foods and how to get these nutrients, which I think people have to understand. This is also about fresh food and getting this into your body as well as supplementation.
Well, that's true. The problem with that is the food supply today is very, well, not today because of COVID, but pandemic time, but the food supply normally is very different today than it was, say, in 1975,
mm-hmm.
for instance. We have seen 400% less, fewer amounts of nutrients in an orange or a vegetable compared to 1975. So we lose a lot over the course of these years because of fertilizers, fungicides, trucking, thawing, freezing, all the things that we do to foods today that we didn't do before, we're losing nutrients. So the problem is, how do you get the right amount of nutrients in consistently every day? Can you and I eat 25 carrots a day to get 30 milligrams of beta carotene? Not possible. We're not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, try to get good foods, try to get fresh foods, yes, but you really need to use supplements all the time.
Also.
To get the right doses in a consistent manner. 25, 30 milligrams of beta carotene, a couple grams of vitamin C, 200, 300, 400 micrograms of selenium, which we didn't talk about.
No.
Zinc, of course, et cetera. All the antioxidants that we put in formulas are very critically important for daily consumption to be consistent with these higher doses of antioxidants and B vitamins that you really can't get from our food supply today consistently.
I think you could also argue that we're living in a time where we have so many stressors and so many exposures to toxins that the demand for these nutrients by our bodies is higher than ever. that in order to survive all these assaults.
That's why we see 60% of women's cancers and 40% of men's cancers, and about 80% of all cardiovascular disease is related to nutritional factors alone. So we need to bring in proper foods, low fat, high fiber, nutrients in the proper doses, proper ratio for your lifestyle. Everything we talked about in 1980, 40 years ago in the book Cancer Nutrition, which was the first of its genre.
So I want to thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to share with the audience?
Well, if they want to look at some of these things, these reports that I wrote, they can go to my website, drsimone.com, and then look up the report section. That'll help them. Everything that I write about is documented fully, so they can rely on the information as being objective.
Thank you so much, Dr. Simone. I really appreciate that you took this time. I know your time is precious. And I wouldn't have called you other than the fact that we really needed you.
Yes.
At this point, the country needs you to focus us back out of hysteria, into some facts, not alternative facts, but facts that allow us to become a healthier nation.
Yeah, good. Well, I appreciate that. You're very kind, and I'll keep doing this, try to bring out objective data, regardless of what goes on politically.
Thank you again.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye. Carol, that was really wonderful talking with Dr. Simone. He's so busy.
My.
I was so impressed that he took so much time to explain to us and explain to the audience. You know, when the government needs help, they call him. Our soldiers in the desert, where it's so hot, were exercising, eating high protein. They're so built and looking so good. And then they would go out in the heat and they would cramp up on the field. They would just cramp. They couldn't walk. They couldn't move. And the pain was excruciating. If you've ever experienced a cramp like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have too. And so they called Dr. Simone and said, what's happening? So he analyzed what they were eating and created a drink to balance them, a drink that would give them adequate protein, which they were seeking because they did want muscles and they wanted to be strong, but simultaneously would alkalize them so they could absorb more minerals. When your body's very acidic with high proteins like what they were eating, you can't absorb the minerals out of your food or even what you're taking in. So he created this balance and the problem stopped. So this is a doctor very renowned, known, and dependent upon to create major changes. Like I said in the beginning of the show, I went to give his credits the first time I ever had him on, and I was going on, and finally he interrupted me. It was so long, his inventions and his discoveries. I mean, it's just amazing. So what did you think? I've got a few thoughts, but what did you think? We're coming closer to the end of the show, but we've got some time to sum this baby up.
Well, I love that he's giving us information that we all need and can use. He's a very, very credible man. You can go further. If you missed something on the program, you can go to his website and read it for yourself, where the resources, as he said, are there. If you don't believe what he says, go back to the original. And I think we people need to do that. We're getting filtered news all the time. We need to go back to the start. And if we're looking at a scientific study, just because people say science doesn't mean it wasn't done with the end in mind already. It wasn't paid for science. You have to look at some of the original documentation and see if their position actually holds up with the information provided. Now, I love how he distinguished the two studies.
Yeah. Now, there's a couple of things that I particularly loved, and something I just learned when we took a little bit of a break before we continued. One, I love the fact that he so outlined so beautifully the nutrients that can change our health. And I'm just going to go through them quickly. They're in the talk with doses, and you can go back and listen to them. So he talked about vitamin D, which we've been talking about for months. He talked about NAC, N-acetylcysteine. And what he didn't explain is how it releases mucus hold on the lung tissue and helps you breathe again and supports glutathione. He also talked about vitamin C. Every day, not just occasionally when you remember it, but every day. Mm-hmm. He talked about quercetin, and he said something I didn't know. He said it had been that they hadn't been able to produce enough of it. And he talked about it in relationship to prevention and lysine as an antiviral, which I've known forever. But I didn't connect
the two. We talked about it briefly.
Two.
Not to the extent he expanded. I believe we talked about lysine briefly several months ago. So it's nice to bring that to the forefront. Again, I think sometimes we leave things off. There's so many tools we have.
Exactly. He talked about zinc, and he talked about beta-carotene in an understanding that I hadn't had such a complete understanding on how beta-carotene in and of itself supports the immune system. I thought its great strength was its conversion to vitamin A. And I also understand that sometimes the conversion is difficult in many people with weak thyroid. So to hear that in and of itself, beta carotene will help the immune system. But you know what? While we took a break, you directed me toward a Dr. Lisa Koch. And, you know, it's going so fast and furiously. She explained something I never understood. Could you share that with us, please?
Well, Dr. Simone referred to it briefly, and we talked about it, too, and in connection with the ACE receptors, concentrating actually in the lung tissue. And it's a receptor that's being used to control high blood pressure. There's what ACE inhibitor, blood pressure pills, have an effect at that particular receptor. So you may have heard the word ACE before. But she said the actual mechanism of action in the binding of the virus to that receptor is a glycation. And glycation means that a sugar molecule attaches to a protein molecule. This is actually not very good because it paralyzes the flexibility of the protein. Now, what she said, we had talked on our show before about the COVID-15. She said,
extra pounds.
We have been sitting at home, inactive, and we're bored. And then what do? We turn to junk food. And what is junk
food? Carbs.
Full of carbs, simple carbs, which would contribute to this binding. So she said, people, be careful of your diet. Have respect for your body. So if you're challenged with an exposure to this virus, the more sugar and simple carbohydrates you eat, the more glycation you can have at that receptor. And that starts the whole cascade.
So susceptibility.
Nutrition. We need to pay attention and avoid the COVID-15.
Without a doubt. So I really appreciate the fact that we're sharing this. You know, like I said, this is why. I mean, I don't understand why this is such a political issue. Too many people have been injured. Too many families have been hurt and destroyed. Why can't we just focus and look at healing? You know, this Lisa Coach. Now, doctors all over the country are starting to speak up. For a while, there was a dearth. It was almost like a vacuum, a void. Now, Lisa Coach, she's a triple board certification doctor, and CVS Pharmacy is telling her she cannot prescribe what she wants to prescribe.
The hydroxychloroquine.
The hydroxychloroquine. And, right. So,
There should be no interference in that patient physician practitioner relationship.
Exactly.
And what do we have? An outside agency causing some big problems for good patient care.
Exactly. So we're going to get back to this. We're not going to let it go, but we've come to the end of our hour. I want to thank you for spending this time with us. I know you learned, I know I did. And I do research on this topic weekly. Please, I'm asking you as a favor to me and to yourself, let go of the politics and work on supporting your body and your healing. I forgot to say one other thing, selenium.
What's that? Selenium. Yeah, some people put that number one, so it's strange that it's at the bottom of the list this time. But very important. And it's just a small dose, 200 micrograms daily is hugely protective.
Thank you so much, Carol. It's always a pleasure. I always learn.
Oh, my pleasure. This was particularly eye-opening. I'm going to go out and buy Dr. Simone's book.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Have a look.
Bye-bye. We'll see you we'll speak next week. Be healthy.
Yeah, be well.
Be well. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
In conclusion, I'd like to say, remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA, CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fornarihealth.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me, Left Hook from Redding, California. Their website is Redding Left Hook. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.